All right. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode. I have Krish with me here today, and Krish is the CEO of Fireflies. This is a really exciting conversation for me because it's not every interview that I get to speak with the CEO of a product I use almost on a daily basis. So welcome, Krish.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Yeah. All right. So to start off, I think it'd be great to hear a bit about your story. And I know you were a PM at Microsoft, so I'd also be curious to hear more about how, as part of your journey, you decided to make that bold decision to leave Microsoft and become an entrepreneur.
Yeah. For me, Fireflies is my first venture outside of working in corporate like Microsoft. I had graduated from Penn in 2015, and then I graduated early, so I had some time, and I decided to go work at Microsoft. I was a PM there for across office, various products. And that was a really exciting and memorable opportunity because I was like this kid out of college and I had a lot to learn and I had a great time there. And then afterwards, I was supposed to go to grad school at Cambridge. That was one of the reasons I had left Microsoft. But that summer, I had a couple months. I flew out to Boston. I had one of my friends who was graduating at MIT at that point in time. We ended up meeting together. And we started working on stuff because we had a bunch of free time. And that turned out to be the foundation or the initial pillar for what Fireflies turned out to be. Obviously, we pivoted and worked on various things along the way and different iterations. But the name stuck around and the initial idea or concept of understanding conversations and knowledge that's buried inside conversations always stayed true to ourselves there. And yeah, it's been a crazy journey over the last 3+ years, learning to build everything from scratch, learning the entire process of what it means to build for businesses, because our end users are both end users like yourself, as well as large corporations. And learning that process, having not had that much corporate experience, has been a pretty wild journey.
Yeah, no, that sounds wild for sure. Yeah, and I'm curious, what is your why for entrepreneurship? Because I mean, to make a leap for a job that good is probably not an easy one. And I'm also curious, like, what was the thinking process? What went through your head as you were going to make that decision? And where were you with Fireflies at the time?
Yeah, so even before Fireflies and before Microsoft, I had always been about tinkering with different products. Like, I always used to have ideas. I'd write, you know, draw sketches on pieces of paper, wireframe. Microsoft had this awesome initiative called the Garage, where we could go and work on ideas together with other people. And even in college, I was part of the entrepreneurship community there. We held like an innovation conference. So I was always constantly about doing, building things and also getting people together that had similar interests. That was actually really what got me excited, is about putting smart people together and working on ideas. I think Microsoft, you are working on something that's already existing and trying to make it better, which was great. Like, I think I had to absorb so much in the early days. But over time, I felt like I wanted to optimize for learning. And I just wanted to constantly keep learning and start tinkering with things. So when I was deciding between grad school or starting Fireflies, I felt like at that moment in time, I was going to get a lot more practical experience if I just went in and did it. Like, there's no book that's going to teach you how to start a company or how to build a product like that scales to hundreds of thousands and millions of people. You just have to go and do it. And you make a lot of mistakes along the way, but that's the best way to learn versus learning through someone else's experiences. I wanted to experience it for myself. And I also felt like I always like to make my life more difficult. I think there's much easier paths, right? Instead of starting a startup, go join a startup that's much later stage. I would always advise that to my friends that want to do entrepreneurship versus starting out scratch. So we definitely had to learn the ropes of not just building product and building hard engineering pieces, but also building a team, building a company. Like, how do you incorporate? How do you deal with all the legal structure stuff? How do you pay your employees on time? We have to learn a lot of those things. And yeah, I just felt like I jumped right in, and probably not the most efficient way to learn, but it was also the most direct and intensive way to learn. Because once you learn those, you won't forget it.
Yeah. I mean, the way you put it to me when we spoke earlier was brilliant. You described it as literally almost as if you were walking through a desert. I find that fascinating because that's such a bold and challenging thing to do. And for me, like, when I heard that, how have you been able to survive walking through a desert, especially without a map, right? Like you had no previous reference. You only had a year at Microsoft. Like I'm sure there's been a ton of sandstorms that you've had to overcome.
Yeah, that's a fun analogy because once you're embarking on that journey through the desert, you have limited supplies. You have a little bit of water, which is your funding. You don't really have a roadmap or blueprint, right? So you don't know which way you're going, but you need to get through the desert, ideally towards the promised land, right? That there's something better on the other side. And for a lot of entrepreneurs or early stage founders, you can go a little bit in and say, this is too much and walk out. But the problem is once you're midway through the desert, it's much harder to go back, right? You're all in. And yeah. I like to use that analogy, but the problem is since you don't have a map, you're going to have to deal with turbulence along the way. You might be going zigzag. You might be going in circles and just coming back to the same spot because you don't have any point of reference. So you have to be very, very persistent. And I think like you can be the smartest person in the world, but if you don't have persistence, it doesn't matter because you could come all the way to almost the end and then realize you haven't made it and then die, right? Or leave. So that's how I think about the desert analogy, because it is a constant process of perseverance. It's a roller coaster. There'll be days where everything feels great, like you're on top of the world. There's other days where you're like, why am I even doing this? Like life would be so much easier if I was working a 9-to-5. I just can't like turn my mind off after I leave work. That was one of the things I noticed at Microsoft as well as at Fireflies, is like I'm constantly thinking about my work and like what I'm doing. And so if you are the type of person where after 5 p.m., it's not my problem, I'll check that email tomorrow or I'll review that stuff after the weekend, definitely don't do startups because it consumes your life.
Yeah, that's a good rule of thumb. But I really like how you mentioned that if you go like halfway through the desert, it's much easier to keep going instead of turning back. It reminds me of something I've heard that it's basically like if you knew how hard entrepreneurship would be, like if you knew everything you would have gone through, like 5 years into your startup, you're like, fuck, I probably would have never started in the first place knowing everything I would have gone through. I think it's a gift to not know all the challenges you'll go through because then it's like, all right, it can't be that bad. This desert can't be that bad. It is, but regardless, you persevere because it matters regardless of the difficulty. Another thing I do want to highlight though is that you mentioned that one of the reasons you really like entrepreneurship is because for you, you just like making your life more difficult, or you like that challenge that life gives you. And I mean, entrepreneurship is a really easy way to achieve that. So I'm curious, like, where does that desire come from? Like most people seek comfort as their home, not necessarily like discomfort or a high level of difficulty. Where does that come from for you? And how has that resulted in what you do today as an entrepreneur?
I think that the right way to say it is like no one might want to be making their life difficult for themselves, but as you start trying new things and you want to keep learning, you just kind of get pulled into it, right? That's probably the number one thing. I optimize for learning versus comfort at that point in time. I think there's always a time for taking things easy, but I'm just someone, I just couldn't do something like 50% or 80%, even if I could get away with it. It's just, it's not part of who I am. And so I always like to understand the why behind things, always try to tinker with things, break things down, understand the parts of it. You know, you talked about ignorance. I think like ignorance is like a positive thing at ample amounts of it. Like a later stage, you need to be knowledgeable. You need to talk to other experts that have done it. I constantly get advice from folks that are at much later stages of building products and building startups. But in the early days, me and my co-founder have to give credit to Sam there as well. It's like, no matter how hard the problem is, yeah, like a large company isn't able to solve it. Like, we're like, we can do it. I'm sure there's a way to do it. Like, so never hearing no is always very refreshing when you have a really good co-founder as well, where we're like, yeah, we'll figure out a way. It's got to work out somehow, right? And that's really the DNA that pushes you forward.
Yeah. No, I mean, when you're unwilling to take no for an answer, you dig your way through a path that probably you would have never imagined existed. So it's valuable. You have to be creative sometimes to find what that path is, but if you're dedicated to it, you'll find it. So we're going to move into like what Fireflies is in a bit, but I want to highlight some other parts of the story that I think are fascinating that got you to where Fireflies is today. So you mentioned you pivoted a lot. Like how many times did you pivot?
Probably 4 or 5 times from the initial core hypothesis. And then even once we landed on our core thing, maybe pivoted once or twice. I honestly think that it's a constant iteration process. Even what we have today, every new feature we build, it's a constant adjustment, constant tweaks. You look at how customers are using the product, what feedback they're giving versus how they actually are engaging with the service. So it's a constant learning process, right? And part intuition, but a lot of data and a lot of understanding of your target customers. What is it that they want? And sometimes the best way to what we felt is to go back to your roots of what are you good at? Like, what is a problem that you face every day and solve that problem for yourself really well? And out of that process, you end up building something that turns into a company rather than don't go chasing, I need to do a startup because I'm at a point in my life where I got to do a startup. I need to hit that checkbox. That's probably the worst way to do a company. And instead of chasing the glamour behind startups, which I don't think there is much, like beside like once in a blue moon, you get like a press release, but majority of the stuff that you do on a day-to-day basis is not very glamorous. So instead, go after the problem that you understand really well, that you face every day and build it. And pretty much what you are solving for yourself, there might be 100 other people out there that need something like that. And that's how you should build a company. And this is also why going back to, if you spend a few years working and learning in a larger organization, you are able to understand the scope of problems you have. If you're building a consumer company, the problems are very much individual. Whereas if you're building for other businesses or corporations, how do you do that without knowing what it's like to even work in a big business, right? So that's also another thing to always keep in mind.
Yeah, that's helpful context. Yeah, and I mean, fundamentally, companies are started from problems, not ideas. If you have an idea that's not attached to a problem, that's like the biggest red flag you could possibly have. Yeah, and so one thing I'm curious about with all the pivots is that why didn't you just give up? You didn't find product market fit for like 4 or 5 times. I'm sure it was like agonizing. Like, what did that feel like to have to pivot that many times? And why didn't you guys just give up?
Quite candidly, the pivots felt natural. It wasn't like we were throwing darts at a board or like going blind at night. Like a lot of those were educated hypotheses. So when something didn't work, we tried to fail fast and understand, okay, why didn't this work? What needs to be done in order to make it work? Do we want to go down that path or go down that product side? If that's not what we are interested in or what we're not passionate about, we'd say no. And then we switch to something tangential, but again, similar to our thesis. So all those pivots were not just random adjustments. It's all been based on the core hypothesis or the core premise of what we were trying to build. And also there's other factors that were exciting because the technology was getting really good, like speech and voice and natural language processing were also getting better along the same time. And you want to be following a nice technology trend as well as a market trend. Video conferencing is going through the roof. Those other factors came together right at around the same time. And obviously with the pandemic, things accelerated. But even if there wasn't a pandemic and we didn't all go remote, we knew that the trends were heading in the right direction. So logically speaking, that's what gets you to keep going. The other thing in the back of my mind was like, is this the reason why I left like an awesome role at a place like Microsoft, just so that I can go a year and not have anything to show for it? And that was definitely something that irked me a bit, where I was like, hey, I can do better. I know I can do better. We put this much effort in. I need to see this through. And so that was also the other part of it. I'd say that's the other 20% that drove us. Yeah.
That's so interesting. I find that 20% interesting because I'm sure like the ego plays a role in that, because I feel the same way. But I think there's also a risk behind that when you are likely in the wrong problem space or in the wrong product and you stay there longer than you should. I mean, like, how do you know when it's the right time to give up? Like, you've pivoted many times, you could have given up. What is like the framework or thinking that you decided to know whether you should give up? Because yes, you have to persevere, but I think there's also times when you have to recognize that this just isn't it, especially given the opportunity costs.
The simple answer to that is there are hundreds of thousands of products out there, SaaS solutions, apps. Why should someone care about you? Right? What is it that you're doing where someone should give more than 10 seconds of their time or attention to what you're providing? And the common thing that I've learned from building products, when you're at a larger company, you tend to build things like features and ship them without really, really understanding the impact it's going to have on the end person, right? You did it because your boss told you or it was part of the roadmap. Whereas when you're at a startup, it's not that straightforward, because if you need to study for a test, you know what the material is. You're going to grind, you're going to study, you want to get a good grade. People can brute force it. So the people that have that sort of mentality where I'm going to brute force, I'm going to study really hard and I'm going to ace this test, or I'm going to ace this interview, or I'm going to get this job, that doesn't work in entrepreneurship, unfortunately. No matter how hard you work or how hard you try, you can't brute force product market fit. No matter how much money you spend on ads to get customers in, if someone doesn't like what you're building or doesn't want to use what you're building, or you're not providing value at the end of the day, then it's not going to work, right? And we've seen in history many startups that have just poured tons of money into marketing and sales, and then eventually the core product didn't really solve the problem that it was intended to solve. The best time to be really candid with yourself and understand is, am I building something that I would want to use for myself? If not, do I have a really good understanding of the people that want to use it? Are they not using it because it's too expensive, or it's a nice to have? Is it a vitamin, or is it a painkiller, like where it actually solves a problem? If you're building these nice to have things that don't solve a problem, it's very hard to be successful in the B2B space. So those are the things, to indicators, because if you're creating an artificial problem in your head that you're solving for and putting a great narrative around it, very, very few companies succeed that way. They must have a really great marketing team, really great product marketing narrative to like tell you, you need this, right? That happened in the 50s and 60s where you're able to buy junk without realizing the purpose of it. But in today's day, every buyer, every purchaser, every consumer is well-educated. We're doing our Google research before we go and purchase anything, whether it's our own subscriptions or our own products. We're reading hundreds of reviews. So in that sense, you have to be really candid with yourself and say, like, am I solving a real problem, or is it just like a made-up thing? You know, this is something that I need to shift away from. That's the best question to ask yourself.
It's a lot of wisdom. I really like thinking about whether your solution is a vitamin versus a painkiller. I think I would make the separation between the problem and the solution, right? The problem, I like to think of it as in like, how many people have the problem? How frequently do they experience the problem? And also, what's the intensity of the problem? Like, is this just a minor inconvenience, or is it something like super serious where people are suffering to a high degree? And then your solution is the connection to that problem. Is your solution to the high degree of pain just a vitamin that's kind of helping a little bit, or is it actually a complete painkiller to that high intensity of pain? So both the product and the problem have to match at a high degree in order for there to be actual value that people are willing to pay for. So I love that. And the last thing I'll highlight that's really interesting is the difference between school, right? School is one very individual and based on hard work and studying, where a startup and entrepreneurship, actually Naval has this great philosophy. Naval Ravikant says that hard work isn't enough in entrepreneurship, as you said. He says there's like three fundamental pillars. First, it's like what you're working on that matters a lot. And then who you work with is super important and next. And then finally, how hard you work and how you execute is super fundamental. But if you're working with the right people and working super hard, but you're working on the right thing that's just a vitamin, it's not going to do all the damage that you want or the impact that you would want. So I want to make sure I highlight that. Awesome. So let's dive into Firefly. So what is Firefly? How would you describe it? And maybe you could tell us a bit about the user experience and how it works.
Sure. Firefly is an AI meeting assistant. It joins your meetings across Zoom, WebEx, Skype, Google Meet, all the major video conferencing platforms, Microsoft Teams. And it joins as a participant. It takes notes. It summarizes the meeting. It transcribes it at very high level accuracy. It allows you to go back and search through your meetings, share the meetings, comment around the meetings, create sound bites from the meetings, essentially collaborate around your conversations. And our goal is to help capture all the voice conversations across work so that you have a smart knowledge base of important information that you can always go back to. And that's really what it is. Like, people use it as an AI note taker. People use it as an archival system to go back and search through their meetings and understand and pull out information that they talked about 6 months ago. There's various use cases for it, used across salespeople. Recruiters use it for their interviews. Internal people use it. PMs use it. Engineers use it. We are very much a horizontal product. Anyone can sign up on fireflies.ai or going to app.fireflies.ai. We have a free tier. We have paid tier where you get like more transcription credits and other features and integrations. But in a nutshell, in 30 seconds, that's what our product is.
Love it. Yeah, super valuable. And I can definitely vouch for the value. I think to summarize it from the way I understand it is that you just have someone transcribing and recording both audio and transcription of every meeting. And the powerful thing about that is that it creates a knowledge base. And I think what's powerful about that is that you have many different knowledge bases within your company, whether it's Google Drive, Google Docs, presentations, maybe you have Notion, or like there's knowledge bases inside of People or Slack internal communication. But one really big source of knowledge is meetings. And that's largely like being relied on either by memory or by a note taker, if people have note takers, which means that they're not as present and can't contribute as much to the conversation. So what's powerful about that is that you can search, kind of find things through the entire knowledge base of meetings, which just makes it powerful. And I've even found myself as a use case where, like, if I'm not able to attend an important meeting for my startup, I'll just listen to the audio as if it were a podcast. And I can do it like at 2x speed and save a ton of time while making sure I have the right context. Because sometimes people do take notes, but it's not enough. So wanted to add that as understanding of the value prop. And I want to get a better conception from you on how you would describe the problem that Fireflies aims to solve.
Yeah, you described the earlier part really well. We also think about the problem as, just because you have an audio recording or transcript, like, how do you extract value out of that? I don't need like a 1 hour recording of a meeting, but maybe I want to only see the action items from that meeting, or important dates and metrics that were talked about. Or if I'm talking to a competitor, or if I'm talking to someone else, what are they bringing up in that meeting related to competitors or pricing? So Fireflies is also not only able to create a knowledge base and record it and transcribe it, make it searchable, but also it's about extracting value out of it and helping you jump to the most important parts of the call. So you talked about reviewing a call at 2x speed. Our belief is that with Fireflies, you can go through a 1 hour meeting in 5 minutes. And that's really important because you can pull up the important things that were talked about, discussed, highlighted. And then the other value there is, a lot of times work happens in meetings, right? And then afterwards, you have to go in, fill out your project reports, fill out your CRM, or fill out other tools you use. But with Fireflies and our integrations and workflows, after a meeting, Fireflies can automatically fill out other apps and stuff, systems where you need to work. So it can send recaps to Slack. It can fill out information in your recruiting system, or it can fill out stuff in your sales system so that a salesperson doesn't have to go back in and manually write everything down. We're also helping automate work for you so that you can focus on having rich, meaningful conversations.
Yeah, that's super valuable. And that solves a lot of different problems. I think something I've heard that is really interesting from Keith Ferrazzi, actually. He's a really cool guy. He mentioned that your culture is largely defined by how you run your meetings. So if you take a step back and think of the systems in which you operate, I think meetings are an essential fundamental component of that. And to be able to transcribe and get more knowledge and information and quicker decision-making out of your meetings is really valuable from a systemic and efficiency standpoint.
Some of the smartest people that I've ever interacted with, the first thing they'll do is they'll take a pen and paper out and start writing stuff naturally, right? And these are really smart people, execs. Keith Rabois, when he was at Square, he was a chief operating officer, said like they'd have like a shared Google Doc where people would like write down their notes, and it was expected you emailed the minutes to everyone so that people can have access to it. That's a really interesting thing, because the culture that Square built in terms of execution and being operationally efficient, we do very similar things with Fireflies. Because if I were to have a meeting, right, around, I'm talking about a new project we're going to be rolling out or introducing some new components inside Fireflies or an engineering review, when we have new folks that join the team, I don't have to go back and do that from scratch, right? I can just say, hey, you need to onboard, go listen to 5 or 6 of these like recaps from Fireflies, and you'll be up to speed on the technology stack. You'll be up to speed on why we're focusing on this. I can literally have them listen to like on all hands and why we're talking about priorities and missions and quarterly goals. All of those things are made possible because of the Fireflies recaps. And I don't like to repeat myself 10 times, and Fireflies helps me do that a lot more efficiently, and I can be at more places and I can get more people context that they need to work.
Yeah, that's fundamental, because I think in order to make the best decisions, you have to have the information that can help you make better informed decisions. And Fireflies can close that gap in many instances. So I love that. So as one of the final things here with Fireflies, I'd love it if you could paint what you think the product vision looks like. Where do you see Fireflies in 5-10 years? I guess, I don't know if you have a conception of just Fireflies as the product itself, but also as the company. What is the vision of the two, if they're different, look like?
We want to automate work from just the sound of your voice, like without having to write things down. Just because of what I said, can the work get done? And we're starting with meetings because that's where we spend almost 40% of our time at work on a day-to-day basis. And we want to help capture that knowledge. That's our starting point. Once we capture that knowledge, we want to help automate work from that knowledge. So by the time I end the meeting, my CRM's filled out, or if I said something on the meeting where, hey, Sam will follow up with you on this project milestone, and then it'll automatically notify Sam saying, Sam, you were mentioned on the call. Please like follow up related to this project milestone. So we want to automate work. Like you've seen how it's worked with Alexa at home or Siri on your phone. There's tremendous use cases and opportunities to automate work. And so we want to do this part really well, the note-taking part, the knowledge base, the transcription. But long-term, just with the sound of my voice, I want work to be done so that I don't have to go back and do it myself.
Yeah, it's a powerful idea, especially because our voice is our most natural form of communicating. And also, you had pointed out that I think we speak at an average of like 150 words per minute, while we write on average like 40 to 50 words per minute. So we're literally be able to communicate almost 3 times more efficiently. But there's a lot of trade-offs to voice, like writing down, taking notes, and whatnot. So if a lot of that can be automated, there's a lot of power in the speed at which decisions and therefore progress and therefore innovation can be made.
Absolutely. Yeah. Voice is a powerful space, and we do speak at a much faster rate than we write. And also some ideas are better communicated through voice in person or over video conferencing than just by writing things down. I think the culture of writing is still important. Like we're a remote team in 8 different countries and writing things down, documenting stuff is really important. But there's sometimes complex thoughts and ideas that are better described when you're speaking. And also the tone, the intonation, like how you emphasize certain things. Voice gives us a lot of important heuristics that just text wouldn't.
That's a good point. Yeah. And as a bit of wisdom, something I've learned recently is that the best use of meetings is to make decisions, because that's one of the things that's really difficult to do offline. Offline, like learning or writing or doing things like that is really easy. But for meetings, making decisions is what I found to be the most valuable use of time.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. So as the final segment here, let's move into some entrepreneurial lessons based on your experience. So the first one I want to dive into is around product principles, right? Because you were a product manager at Microsoft, you did an internship in product management, and in general, you, of course, love building products. So I'm curious, what would be like one or two of the most important or valuable product principles that you use for building products? And if you have an example of how you use those principles with Fireflies, that would be really helpful.
Yeah. Product management isn't about shipping features. It's about moving metrics, and it's about solving end user problems and delighting that end user. So a lot of times people think their sole job is to ship. And like, how much did I ship? But you don't want to be shipping crap. You don't want to be shipping bloat. You want to be delighting people. Sometimes the best product managers are people that are removing friction from a customer journey, that might be removing features that are not necessary. So simplicity is key. And I'm actually a big believer in minimalism. So everything I do, how I organize my room, how I organize like my house, it's all around minimalism. I don't like a lot of stuff or clutter. And I take the same approach to product design and product development. And we are also taking the same process in terms of how we write code, right? And how we build products and how efficiently we're writing code, how we're reusing components and different libraries. So I think minimalism, if you can read, you can learn things outside of general product management that just helps influence good design thinking. So that's like one big thing that I believe in, I follow, I learned at Microsoft, and as well as apply here at Fireflies.
Yeah, that's valuable. One quick follow-up there is product management is about moving metrics as opposed to like just building features, right? So one question I've had is, how do you know what the right metrics are? What's your process or system for determining what is the right metric that we want to be moving forward?
There's lagging indicators and leading indicators. And sometimes people only focus on top line metrics like revenue or user signups, but those are lagging. There's other things that help contribute to those things. Is it because people are sharing the product more? People are talking about the product more? Is it because people are getting exposed to Fireflies in meetings like this? So there's a number of different underlying drivers that you have to think about. So I always like to look at it as it's a funnel and there are bottlenecks along that funnel. And how do you keep eliminating those bottlenecks or opening them up? And that will drive those larger KPIs. So when you think about that funnel or cycle and where like things are going to get blocked or not as efficiently converting, that's how you do it. This is really the growth mindset of, you know, what being a growth PM is. So at Microsoft, I was working on the early growth experimentation platform for all of Office. And we're shipping lots of features and realizing that wasn't necessarily moving metrics, but instead we focused on the metrics. And as a result of the metric, you're building the feature. I also think that just being data-driven alone isn't enough. Some company like Google can test like 50 different shades of blue on like a button and see which has a better ROI. But small startups don't have that luxury or that many users to get that sort of statistically significant data. So instead, you have to also couple that with qualitative insights from customers and being able to understand what customers are saying. So when we do customer interviews, we're obviously using Fireflies. And then I go back and I listen, I read the transcript, I am combing through carefully because sometimes what we say isn't what we do. And it's important to understand like what is it that the customer actually needs versus exactly what they're saying.
Yeah, that's a really good point. When you don't have that many users, the quantitative data really isn't that helpful. So qualitative data, like user interviews basically, is always important, but especially in the beginning when you don't have the scale to get good quantitative data, that's really when it helps the most. So I love that. Basically, I guess in a nutshell, in order to determine features, don't just come up with ideas. Try to identify what are the key metrics you want to optimize for, as well as the problems that exist that come from user interviews or the qualitative interviews. And then that can help you determine what features best fit into those.
Exactly.
Cool. Awesome. So I want to read an excerpt here of something you said in an interview and just get your thinking on it. So you had said that execution is greater than having unique ideas. Startup CEOs put too much emphasis on ideas. Your unique insight on a market, feature, or product will definitely give you an early mover advantage. You can only maximize that advantage if you execute diligently. Speed is the greatest strength a startup can have, and most people have ideas that remain as ideas forever. And very few people are going to be able to put in the work to prove those ideas out. So I'd love to hear more on your thoughts on that and the importance of execution, moving fast, and how you go about doing that at Fireflies to make things happen efficiently.
So this goes back to the idea of if you're going to fail, fail fast, get the data on it, learn from it, and then go on to your next experiment. Life is a sequence of failures. And when you fail many, many times, you're getting smarter and smarter to hopefully do the right thing. So speed is super important. If you don't have the speed, like then your rate of execution falls. Like think about a company that ships one feature every quarter or every year, or does like one new innovative thing every year versus a company that's shipping new innovative things every week or moving metrics every week. So that growth mindset we talked about earlier is important here because you have to ruthlessly execute. And the idea is you have to be impatient on the short-term stuff. Like if I want something done, it has to be done right. Like there is no buffer room or any reason or excuse, but you have to be very patient on the long-term stuff. Your vision doesn't happen overnight. The direction of the product doesn't happen overnight, but it's because of how ruthlessly you're executing on the short-term stuff that lets you get to that long-term vision. So the speed of iteration means you learn faster. So if you make 20 mistakes and learn from it, versus someone that's two quarters behind, that stuff compounds over time. And you almost build multi-year advantage over another product, another service, your competitors, if you're constantly iterating at a faster cadence. And you can accomplish more in 2 years versus what it would take them 5 or 6 years to do. And that edge is why you have big successful products like Google, like Facebook, like Netflix. And even like you look at the electric car space, why is it that Tesla is verticalizing everything from the stations to the batteries to the actual parts? It's because they are executing, iterating at such a rapid pace in an industry that is historically very slow to adopt to change.
Very well said. I had heard from someone that your ability to innovate largely depends on how many experiments you're running, because the more experiments you run, the more you're failing, and the more you fail, if you have the right culture, you'll learn from that and be able to move even quicker. So love that. Cool. I'm going to read out one last excerpt that I thought was really powerful to get your thoughts on it. So you had mentioned that the framework that has helped you and Fireflies move a lot quicker and ship continuously is an obsession with building systems that can be repeated over and over again on autopilot. So, I mean, in other words, you want to build systems that are self-sufficient. So I'm curious why you think building systems is so important, and what is an example of a system you have built at Fireflies that has created considerable value?
Yeah, a lot of companies have these systems in place because systems can come in the process of hiring, like you're hiring great people that also help build out the process and can own it, versus you having to step in every step of the way and guide them. So once they have the context, you can move out of the way and help them or let them execute, really. So that in itself, people are a system, right? Your engineering framework is a system. Like, do you have the guardrails? Do you have the testing in place? Are you shipping without bugs or issues? That's a system. Your product customer feedback loop is a system. Like, you're putting something in front of customers, you're getting feedback, you're understanding why, and you're learning from that, and then you're continuously iterating on that. Even your churn is a system. When someone churns and they leave feedback on why they don't like the product, you learn after enough times, you see a common pattern of the reasons, and then you adjust for it. So everything is a feedback loop, whether it's building your hiring team, whether it's your people, whether it's your product, whether it's engineering. And I take that ML mindset, because in machine learning or deep learning, it's not about the person or company that has the best model. Sometimes it's about the company that has the most data that it can learn from and iterate on. And so the data matters, the data loop matters, right? Or the feedback loop matters. So in the same way, building systems is about building feedback loop mechanisms and learning from those.
Yeah, man, there's a constant theme here around learning. And the key to learning is to getting feedback. And if you want to get continuous feedback, it's important to think about all the systems that can enable that. And I think the key of what I got from what you just said is that if you see everything as a system, like your people, your engineering, how you interact with customers, how they like churn or everything, if you see that as a system, you're going to think about how you can automate things and also learn from it or improve the system or detect its inefficiencies and improve upon it. So love that. Awesome. I know we're out of time and you have to go, so we can wrap it up there, Krish. This was super fun. And just as a final question, yeah, where can people learn more about you and Fireflies?
Yeah, it was great. First of all, thanks for having me again. I always love talking about this stuff, so it was really fun. You can find out more about us, our product, on fireflies.ai, like the website. So the name of the company is also our website. You can find me on LinkedIn, Krish Ramanini. You can also find me on Twitter, Krish_Ramanini. So yeah, there's multiple places. And yeah, we'd love for people to check out the product. And again, we're constantly always learning. We're also hiring. So across different roles, product, design, engineering. Yeah. And so feel free to reach out.
Cool. Love that. Well, I'm very excited to see how Fireflies continues to progress, especially as a user. So thank you for building something incredibly valuable, not only for me, but for many others. And really excited to see how you guys will progress. So thanks for coming on, Krish. And for the people listening, thanks for listening. And we'll catch you on the next episode. Be infinite, as always, my friends. Hey guys, three quick footnotes here before closing off. So the first is, did you enjoy the topics discussed in this episode? Well, I invite you to join the Slack community for this podcast, where we'll keep the conversation going by engaging in discussions related to the episodes discussed in this podcast. Here, you'll be able to engage in conversations with me and other listeners. And if you really enjoy this podcast, it is likely that you would relate well with other listeners that also enjoy the podcast. In this community, you'll be able to meet, engage, learn from, and potentially collaborate with the like-minded entrepreneurs that listen to this podcast. Let's invent the future together. The second quick note is, If you are interested in receiving updates on new episodes, I invite you to subscribe to my newsletter. And in this newsletter, I'll also share notes, insights, wisdom, tools, and strategies that are designed to help you become a better entrepreneur and live a healthier, fulfilling, and more productive life. And finally, the last footnote is that you can follow us on social media accounts to get updates on new episodes and engage with invaluable content related to entrepreneurship. And also, we have a website now. You can go to inventingthefuture.ai for detailed show notes on all the episodes. So the links for joining the Slack community, subscribing to the newsletter, the social media accounts, and the website can all be found in the show notes for this episode. So with that, I would like to wish you a day, week, year, and life filled with an abundance of love, energy, and prosperity. Take care and stay infinite, my friends.